This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Before we go down this path, and I'm sorry I didn't say a more friendly hello to introduce you here. Billy, can you just tell me how you would describe your relationship with Mina?
I like Mina. I mean, I think we're, you know, acquaintances.
Thank you, Billy, for nothing. Mina, how would you describe your relationship with Billy? Because you attacked him as soon as he arrived. Again, and Billy, you're just exasperating. When I need a lot, you give me a little. And when I need a little, you give me a lot. Like, you're just a perpetual exasperation. Just turn your microphone off. I don't want to talk to you. Mina, how would you describe your relationship with Billy?
I have the perfect analogy. It's like when you have a cat for a really long time and it's been your only pet, and you know, maybe you have a menagerie of other animals, but the point is you only have one cat. That's Billy. He's the cat in this scenario. Dan, you're the owner. Then one day you see another cat walking down the street in an alley, and you think, oh, what a cute little kitten. Cats like each other, right? Despite not having any, you know, research or idea how cats get along. So you bring the new cat home. The way those two cats would interact, and I think most situations based on my knowledge of like cat dynamics, is how Billy and I interact. Not necessarily fighting, nothing overt, nothing aggressive, but not really friends, right? You can't really deduce how they feel about each other. They're just two cats.
Two cats that fight, by the way, because what do you mean no? Mina, when you got here...
Just a couple of cats, Dan, you know.
Mina, when you got into our environment, the place that you decided to attack, you surveyed the environment and you were like, well, I am not an aggressive person and I need to establish something here in the prison yard. I'm going to go after the weakest of the links. That's what it felt like happened here, the most neurotic of the links.
But that was a one-time thing. That was the alley cat coming in, seeing the pampered house cat, and wanting to briefly assert dominance, but then kind of letting it go after a while. And you know what? He stays away from my litter box now. He doesn't mess with me. And I think we've reached an equilibrium.
Okay, well, I think, though, that that's about to be ruined right now, because Mina has an idea, Billy, that would totally ruin the Marlins season. This is an idea she really actually believes in. It's not an idea I've heard. I haven't heard this idea espoused by anybody. Explain to me where you heard it and what it is that you believe has some plausibility here.
So, first of all, I put it in the document of ideas, and the way I described it was, someone told me this. I think it's interesting. I didn't really throw my weight behind it. I want to make that very clear. The person who I heard from, however, is a high-ranking sports person. I won't say what sport, but it's an executive, okay? And we've been talking about what's been going on in baseball, and he suggested to me, and we were talking about the probability that all these postponed games will even happen. And we were talking about the fact that there's this kind of awkward... Not awkward, but you've got the commissioner of baseball basically trying to push the blame onto the players. You've got people asking, well, maybe there should be some personal accountability in all of this, like everything, but, you know, not wanting to completely let the commissioner get off scot-free. So the idea is this. If you're a team, a baseball team, and you have an outbreak, okay, instead of having your game postponed, it should be a loss for you. That way, you're not punished financially. Yeah, I guess if it hurts your chances to get to the playoffs, there's bonuses there, but it's not like a dramatic, oh my God, I'm being held accountable for my, you know, teammates' bad behavior. And it would compel self-regulation, because here's a punishment nobody wants. You know, if you're a team, you want to make it to the playoffs, you want to win games, so you're more likely to tell your teammate, hey man, don't go to that casino. Or if you're the Marlins, do you really need a milk right now? Don't go out for a milk. What do you think?
Billy, so you've been very excited about the way the Marlins have started the season. What are they now? After winning a doubleheader against the Orioles, 5-1.
5-1, Dan. Or, best team in baseball.
Or as Chris Cody says, 13.5 and 2.7 based on the prorated rate of basically 2. Yes, yeah, see, Mina made the face that I made during the local hour, not understanding this math. Chris, why don't you explain it to Mina here so that she understands what the Marlins record is today before we get to Billy's thoughts on Mina saying the Marlins should take losses for getting sick.
Every game in a 60-game season is worth 2.7 games from what it would be in a normal season, Mina. So the Marlins are 5-1. We take the 5. We times it by 2.7. We get 13.5. The Marlins are 13.5 and 2.7 to start the season, and I'm fired up.
I just love the fact that you say times it still as an adult.
He's an adult.
I was explaining it. I was teaching. I'm teaching.
Believe it or not, that went a lot better this time around than last time around.
You should have heard how he tried to explain it during the local hour, but he is a total unmitigated oaf, and that's what he does. He times it. So how do you feel about what it is that Mina's suggesting there, even though she's suggesting a diluted version of it, putting on an unnamed executive that may or may not be from baseball, and also saying that she put it in a document without full weight behind it, as if her full weight behind anything would mean anything. And she did say, I thought this idea was reasonable. She did say that. That is something that sounds like putting a lot of your weight behind it. So, Billy, your thoughts are what here? Because it's not an idiotic thought.
I mean, I'm glad that we're cats that stay in separate litter boxes, because, geez, that took a long time to get to. And, I mean, this probability talk seems boring to me. So you think people should be punished for getting sick? Okay, sorry, Mean. I mean, it seems like the sickness is punishment enough, but I guess we'll give them losses, too.
I'm just suggesting that we're all facing, as a nation, as a world, as a society, but certainly as individual sports, how do you solve this problem of the commons, right? This problem where this disease, you can be a person who does everything right and wears your masks and follows the rules, but if you run into the wrong person on the wrong day and they do the wrong thing, you're screwed. And there's no natural solution for this other than actually, you know, making a bubble and enforcing it with an outside source. So I'm suggesting that perhaps, you know, you could call it even a system of incentives. Think of it this way instead of a system of punishments. If you play by the rules, you got a chance of winning. It's an incentive.
What was that mumbled voice thing that you did there? What were you trying to convey with the muttering?
It's the bubble, right? I mean, obviously, they should have had a bubble. I mean, that's the whole sort of problem with all of this and every non-bubble sport. I just, like, didn't feel like relitigating that for the 10,000th time.
Dan hated the bubble idea for baseball. It was so strange. But what do you do if you're, like, one of these people that gets it, that's following the rules, and someone that's a rule breaker gives it to you? Now you just lose because you had bad luck?
First of all, you're not losing the whole season. It's probably, how many games did the Marlins miss that are now losses?
I mean,
three or four, five.
Okay.
No, they missed like a week, but by Chris's math, it's like 17 games.
Let me apply it to this situation, maybe draw an analogy. What if you guys knew if one of you caught it, there would be no show for the day? Wouldn't you be more likely to, if let's say you're Billy and you see a picture of Chris, he's tagged on Instagram, he's at a bachelor party with his boys out fishing, just not wearing a mask. Wouldn't you be more likely to text him? He's making like bro faces right now and say, hey, man, I don't know how you guys talk to each other, but sup, bro, why are you doing that? That was a question for you, Billy. That was a serious question. If there was a system of, you know, a punitive system in play, wouldn't you be more likely to self-regulate?
I would. I actually don't think this is a crazy idea. I don't think like the first time you get sick, you should be just get losses. But if it becomes like a repetitive thing, like maybe 7 games, you can have 7 postponed games because of this. But once you get past that, they're all losses. Like if this happens again to the Marlins, they all just start becoming losses. I'm with that. I don't think you should just start at losses, but there should be a threshold maybe.
Mulligan games.
All right. Excellent work out of you, Billy, as always. Mina Kimes will accuse me of rooting against sports in the next segment. But here is the fake Stugatz. Billy, you were a special kind of terrible in that segment.
Thanks, Dano. See full terms and conditions at fuel. And since we know that you've been missing golf, we here at ESPN Radio teamed up with our friends at the PGA to give you all something big to look forward to in 2021. This is your chance to win a VIP experience to the 2021 PGA Championship at the world-class Island Golf Resort. For your chance to win, go to www.espnradiosweeps.com to enter now through August 11th, limited to one entry. One grand prize winner will be selected. Visit www.espnradiosweeps.com for official rules.
You got to say the name, no? You don't want to say
prize.
The name? You don't want to say the name? You can't say the name? I don't blame you if you can't say the name.
Let's see here. Let me give it a chance. Quinoa. All Quinoa right. Island Resort. Golf resort.
You do a better Stugatz than Stugatz. Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Does fake Stugatz Billy do a better job as Stugatz than Stugatz? Mina Kimes is with us. Why were you making faces throughout Billy's fake Stugatz read?
I didn't know what the bit was. I didn't know he was trying to impersonate Stugatz. I thought he sounded like sort of the verbal equivalent of like a child standing on another child's shoulders wearing a trench coat. But now I understand that is how he would impersonate Stugatz.
Sign of a good impression when you don't know what it is, Mina.
I think that's the opposite of a good impression.
Well, speaking of opposite, you guys would have really enjoyed, as opposed to that first segment we did, the conversation that happened on air was not nearly as good as the conversation off air. So, Billy, Chris, real quick, as you dismantle Mina's truly terrible idea, about giving losses to the sick. I mean, she's worse than Sedano, who thinks that Rudy Gobert should be banished from the league because he got sick. He wanted to suspend Rudy Gobert for getting the coronavirus. Now you're giving you're giving a team that just has nothing but coronavirus opponents the ability to make the playoffs without playing games, just by winning all the games against a team that's sick. And then you also open up the situation in a sport that's rampant with cheating for the Stugatz behavior of teams trying to get other teams sick in order to get forfeited victories.
Okay. You know what she did there, Dano? She upped the ante.
I don't even know where to begin. First of all, it's not my idea. It's not my take. I received an email from Chris Cody at like 9 p.m. Pacific saying, hey, we do this thing now where we put suggestions for show ideas into a Google Doc. Crazy, right? Preparation. So I just ripped off a few heaters just thinking I'm a team player, content machine. We're obviously not going to talk about last night's Lakers loss. So here's this fun hypothetical that a friend of mine introduced. I don't necessarily get behind it, but perhaps this could stimulate some, you know, invigorating early morning conversation and some interesting takes. This is not my take. Okay? Just want that on the record. Second, how would teams deliberately get other teams sick? Are you thinking like a smallpox blanket situation where they're throwing things at or are they just showing up in the breathing all over them? I don't understand how that would work.
You send them dirty milk.
Good job, Billy.
All right. The conversation, as I said, was better off air than it was on air. But Billy, for some reason today, decided to just preserve all of his good stuff for off air. Because he thinks that's the way to ride the rocket ship into the future glory in radio. So I don't know why he's doing that. Chris, would you like to help me do a radio show by telling people what it is you guys were talking about during the break in order to beat up Mina Kimes?
Well, we were just like, you kind of explained it well, I thought, on the front end. We were just saying how a team like the Yankees, who have had some games postponed this season so far because of other teams being sick, they would have a great record so far in Mina's system. So it's not really fair that way. And then Billy, like you said, suggested then we would have some nefarious things with people getting sick. Like I'd be, you know, if I'm a first baseman and I'm not feeling well, maybe I give a cough, an extra cough or two when there's a base runner on. And maybe I give him a good pat on the neck. Like I say, good job, man. Good hit. And I like touch the back of his neck with my fingertips. I don't know. Like, there's just...
Why are you shaking your head no, Roy? Who are you disgusted with right now?
Billy. And everybody on this show.
Billy? No, everybody didn't say any of this.
No, everybody on this show I'm disgusted with. You guys left me with an ample amount of dead air. And alarms go off in Bristol when dead air is present. So you guys have got to fill in the silences, please. For the love of God.
Yeah, well, it's just weird. It's like I said earlier in the show. I don't understand how you have this gift, Billy, of giving me nothing when I need more and giving me too much when I don't need anything. Like, it's an amazing formula. Yes, Tony, what do you have here?
Why does Chris have the first baseman rubbing the neck of the base runner? Like, if that's something that's going
to
transmit the virus, I don't really get that.
Spread germs, okay? Tony, we don't know.
They don't know how germs work, Chris.
We don't know a lot about this thing, okay? You don't know exactly how it gets passed. Maybe if I had it and I touched the back of your neck, maybe you have it now. You don't know.
Touching the back of the neck? That doesn't
I'm just saying, if I'm a first baseman, where else am I going to touch the person? They have a full baseball uniform
you run a finger across his lip.
Right. What maybe you poke him on the cheek.
You sensually caress the base runner by sticking an index finger in his mouth.
You got your double play, your triple play, your four play. Makes perfect sense, Chris. Totally normal.
Wet willies as well is a good idea.
There you go. See, spitball session.
That's more realistic. Yeah.
Bomani Jones is going to join us next. Mina, why is your head in your hands? Chris, why are you so frustrated? Start with Mina. We got to get to Bomani Jones here.
Do we have time? I mean, that had to have been half of the segment right
there.
Yeah,
it took a long time. It really did.
Somehow
I know, but
somehow they've approximated the like tone, tenor, and length of a normal Billy story.
Yes.
And you didn't even write it.
I know. It's amazing. So anyways, Bomani Jones is doing a lot of interesting things right now. The latest with Vanity Fair is something I want to get into. But as it relates to this college football stuff, he's actually been reporting and talking to players. So I wanted to understand what's happening with college football, because it actually feels like we might actually find some systemic change from within this as players have discovered that they actually have a power. It took a pandemic. So first, Bomani, thank you for joining us. Check out his podcast, The Right Time, with Bomani Jones. Can you tell us what it is specifically you did for Vanity Fair?
Actually, I can't.
Okay. Very good.
I can tell you that it's really good and it's kind of long, but they want to wait for the issue and all the stuff to actually come out. But I can tell you generally, it is an issue that it gets edited by Ta-Nehisi Coates. You got some other people in there. Ava DuVernay is doing something. I know Josie Duffy Rice is doing something for it. It's going to be pretty damn dope. And my story has a really cool picture on it. I know that much.
Mm. Bo, I want to ask you sort of from a macro level about what's happening right now with college athletes, because it's sort of both a product of forces that have been building for a long time, but also of this particular moment, right? A moment in which the quote-unquote benefits that have been portrayed as pay, erroneously, for a lot of these kids are not necessarily available to them when there's no central authority making decisions that would protect their health. And then, of course, there's this broader background of this movement for racial and social justice that clearly is informing a lot of this. Now, those other things, well, they're going to go back to normal once this is all over. So do you think this movement by these athletes is sustainable beyond the pandemic?
Well, it's interesting because I think that what's going on in the Pac-12 and what's going on in the Big Ten are two different things. I talked to a gentleman with the Big Ten movement yesterday, and the difference between their movement and the Pac-12 movement, aside from the fact that the Big Ten movement is not asking for compensation and the Pac-12 movement is, it's the fact that the Big Ten movement views itself as working cooperatively with its conference. And the Pac-12 guys are struggling to get, you know, Larry Scott and those people to actually meet with them with any sort of urgency. That's a huge one there. Like, what I think there's a potential for in the Big Ten is they might be able to establish some sort of cooperative relationship with the conference, because I think that at the very least, the Big Ten seems to understand that the goals of this movement, at least in the short run, are actually the same as the goals of the conference, which is to make sure that they actually play. This is going to require a more stringent enforcement of the safety protocols. The problem I think that the Big Ten guys are ultimately going to learn is that these guys have no interest in cooperating with you. That's not really what they want to do. I think they want to do it right now in order to get everybody back onto the field. But in a larger sense, if the schools had any interest in cooperating with the players, they would have done it by now. Andrew Cooper, who is a distance runner at Cal, who has been on these issues for a very, very long time, but he said a big thing that he's learned in all his study is that you can only start a labor movement with a work stoppage. And so that, I think, is a big distinction between the two of them. And when we start talking about what the sustainability of this can be, it really depends on whether the Pac-12 is going to be willing to take these guys seriously and whether the Big Ten is going to show respect for that cooperation.
It's interesting, Bo, because I keep hearing from people who know better than I that the whole college football thing is going to collapse here within like 10 days, that we're about to approach some sort of Armageddon on this. And I wonder, you may have just answered this, I wonder if the things that we see happening now die right there, die with their inability to take the games away from colleges.
Well, I mean, they can take them away, right? It just depends on how much heart people have in this. If they want to do it, they can take it away. It's really going to be a matter of how far a lot of these players are willing to go. When they walk this up to the line, how far is it that they are willing to go? There are some that are absolutely willing to say, no, I'm not going to play. There were some that couldn't even get past 24 hours of the letter being out because the power dynamics are so skewed, and guys just have to say to themselves, I guess this is just the thing that we have to do. But the thing that COVID's going to flip on this is, even if it doesn't look like a real outward revolutionary sort of, fine, I'm not going to play, a lot of these guys are just simply going to opt out because they're terrified. Like, before we even get to, like, the seismic change or what could happen to the larger landscape of college football, there's a very human element of this, I think, that everybody needs to deal with, which is the fact that these dudes are scared and don't really have much power over what they can do in terms of actually playing and having to subject themselves to the risks that come from COVID-19. The next level of it that I don't think gets discussed nearly enough is these guys aren't just doing this for themselves. They're doing this for their coaches. Most of the guys that I've talked to in the Pac-12 said that when they talk to their coaches, their coaches were on board with what they were doing, in large part because the coaches also think that this is a futile mission and that the guys aren't being protected. And on that list of coaches who feels that way, by the way, was Nick Rolovich at Wazoo. Like, I don't know what happened and what flipped at the end, but players told me that they talked to him a couple weeks before this, and they talked to him about the movement, and that he was supportive of it because he understood that what was going on was not sustainable. And then at the end, he went and lost his mind. So, I mean, for a lot more people than I think that people, than folks understand they are.
Yeah, it's interesting, Bo, because the coaches are, from a health and safety perspective, like the most vulnerable people in some ways now because of their age, right? You've got your, like, James Franklin's having to spend the entire season coaching away from his family. He's not the only one. The difference, of course, is that they're being compensated, which makes it an entirely different equation. But part of me wonders if the NCAA had gotten its, you know what, together back in June, and there was a centralized, you know, authority in all of this, and there were some guidelines in a sense that there was a teacher in the room, that maybe we wouldn't have even gotten to this point.
Yeah, but I think that part of what creates such an issue here for the NCAA, and I just don't think this gets talked enough, which is we talk a lot about there being like the Power Five and then the Group of Five of all this, but the reality is the distinction of the football bowl subdivision is too broad. It's kind of like how on the franchise tag in the NFL they call all its offensive linemen the same, and it messes up the scale there because there's a difference between what a center gets paid, what a guard gets paid, what a tackle gets paid. I think a major problem the NCAA has here, if I want to cut them a little bit of slack here, is testing is expensive, and not everybody can afford to do these tests. And even if we looked at the NCAA and said, well, why don't you guys pay for the testing? 95% of their budget comes from that tournament that they did not have in March and April. So even if they wanted to have these standardized protocols, the problem with standardizing it is not everybody can afford what the standard is going to be. Now, I don't know this for fact, but this has been my assumption, is that the Ivy League went ahead and made their call and said, hey, we're not going to have a season. The next two conferences to say they weren't going to have one were the SWAC and the MEAC. And as much as I would like to think that my HBCUs were out in front of this issue and standing on behalf of the players, I also know damn well they could not afford the level of testing that would be required in order for this to happen. And a lot of schools cannot afford the level of testing that is required in order for this to happen. So I do think that as much as the NCAA would love to have had something standard, I don't know how they can when not everybody can afford this. And I do think that at some point when people start scratching beneath the surface, what they're going to find in this is a lot of schools have been going about this the wrong way simply so they don't have to pay for all these tests.
I have more questions. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is where you should get your insight on matters like these. We come back with Bomani Jones in a second. Bomani Jones with us. The Right Time with Bomani Jones. I got a million questions and no time to ask them. Among the details, Colorado State, Washington State, Clemson, Florida State, being reported about how these coaches deal with these college players, which are the ones that you find most dehumanizing?
The one that jumps out to me is Washington State, and not exactly, I think, for the reasons that people would think. I don't know if this has been, like, really publicly reported, but a big thing that happened after the guys opted out was that they then received an email from the athletic director that stated the things they would still have access to, counseling, academic support, things like that. The things they would no longer have access to, it was two big things. One of them was the weight room and the locker room, and the other one was the dining halls. And both of those I actually think to be reasonable, that if you're saying your concern is for COVID, then we need to decrease the number of people that are coming through here. and totally understand that. The thing was, how are they supposed to eat if they can't come to the dining hall became the question. And so I had talked to two players who had specifically said that after Sunday, they had not eaten because they did not have access to meals. So I hit up Washington State Sports Information Director, and I asked, so what are players going to do for meals? And he said, well, they will have an increase in their stipend check. Okay, got it. Next stipend check, I asked one player, he said he expects to get his stipend check on August the 20th. Here's what I find dehumanizing about that. They told me that, but as far as I can tell, they did not tell the players that. That in the course of all of this, nobody seemed to stop and ask themselves, well, damn, how are these dudes going to eat? No one seemed to ask that. I asked one player, I was like, are you doing okay on food? He said, yeah, I had a job and I was able to save up some money, so I'm good. But that's not dealing with getting your food in the short run. So we'll see when that next run of checks comes out, whether these guys get the money. I imagine that they would, but what are they supposed to do in the intervening time period? It blows my mind that nobody would consider that fact.
Bo, not a lot of time left. But I want to ask you, you've been talking to some of these kids. Are they different from how we were? Because it occurs to me when we talk about whether all this is sustainable, this current moment will pass, things will go back to normal in college sports, but it seems like it's plausible there's an underlying shift in the way these student athletes see their situation and see the world in general.
Yeah, I think that we're dealing with a much more idealistic set of young people. I think we've seen this across the board. And the point that I've made in the last couple of months is that, generally speaking, this generation of people don't make enough money to expect to get their piece of the rock down the line. I think the people my age believed that that was the way that it would spin, is that we'd reach a point where we would get our piece of the rock. They don't think they're going to get their piece of the rock. Therefore, they demand that these companies that they deal with, they demand that these companies come strong for them. They demand that these companies represent what they claim to represent. And that, I think, is the biggest difference.
Bomani, thank you. Check out his work at The Undefeated. He has been reporting this story, and check out his work, The Right Time with Bomani Jones is the podcast. Thank you for being on with us, Bo. We appreciate it.
All right. Check out First Take at 11. I'm about to jump on there, too.
All right. First Take at 11 as well. I'm wondering here, Mina, because something Bomani just tweeted out I want to talk to you about, which is the things that are happening here on The Ellen Show. And now Jay Leno has come to the total unequivocal defense of Ellen. And one of the things Bomani says, it's best for to ride for your folks in private on these kinds of things, especially with a person with enough money to ride for themselves in public. So I want to talk Ellen with Mina next.